From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
Everything I thought of what entrepreneurship would be and starting a business would be was not for the first few years. I think if you could design probable potholes that a guy would go through, Connor, I fell into all of them.
I'm Connor Carney, and that's the voice of Brian Crowley of Broadlake, a private equity company founded by business partner and fellow entrepreneur Pete Smith. Brian is a former Irish international boxer and founder of the TTM Group, a specialist recruiter and healthcare company with offices in Ireland, the UK, and throughout Europe. Having taken an investment from Broadlake 5 years ago, Brian saw an opportunity to reinvent himself, changing his role from corporate CEO to investor and partner for Broadlake's family of businesses. In this conversation, Brian talks about how boxing at the highest level gave him the resilience to succeed in business, how he nearly went bust in 2008, and of course, how he bounced back, growing from 500,000 in revenue to 11 million in the following 4 years, and subsequently to over 90 million where they stand today. I started off by asking Brian how he got involved with Broadlake.
My history with Broadlake is back in 2016, Pete Smith, the CEO of Broadlake, invested in my company in TTM Healthcare. And for 4 or 5 years after that, we've been scaling the business. So then about a year and a half ago, kind of got to a stage in my businesses, Connor, where you had our international healthcare recruitment company, TTM, and you have our healthcare service business, Resilience Care. We've a managing director in both companies and management teams in both companies. Both managing directors running the businesses far better than I ever did. And one of the big challenges with entrepreneurs is you set up a business and you grow a business, but your intention was never really to run it or to manage it. And I would say I come into that category of entrepreneurs where I'm probably better at the start and the drive rather than the run. So Pete and I were speaking, and Pete was saying, you know, the best place for me was out of the business to give those two MDs and those two management teams the space to run it. So Pete's offer to me was to come in here to Broadlake. It gives me space to think, gives me space to work with the two leaders, and also gave me the opportunity to work with some of the other firms that are part of the Broadlake family. So for me, I've spent all my life in services, so it's been brilliant to be able to be a bit involved with the handmade soap company, which is probably one of the best known brands in the country. Spectacular brand, done as an amazing entrepreneur. 2468, which has a coffee and water and office services business with nearly 8,000 customers, and another amazing business, Donald Garhy, the founder. And then up in the north, ConveyorTech, a team led by Phil and his two colleagues, which manufacture conveyor belts for the likes of the Royal Mail and massive quarries all over the world. So for me, the chance is like a chocolate shop, know, where you get a chance to work with all these amazing businesses and entrepreneurs. So I would say, without doubt, Connor, probably the best decision I've ever made in life. And the last year and a half has been brilliant. And, you know, 6 months of that has been in the middle of COVID, and it's still been brilliant.
What's your role here? What is it that you bring to the table that might not have been there before?
So we've, as you saw from the building, you know, and I know it's hard to probably get across, you know, how proud we are of this building through a podcast, but we're very alternative. So we're not a pinstripe suit private equity company. We're just not that. So my role within here, you know, would be a lot of time working directly with the leadership teams in the businesses that I've invested in or that I founded, but also spending a lot of time with some of the other companies in the family, some of the leaders in those businesses, helping them to scale, helping them with advice. It's almost like a professional stable of boxers where they all get the benefit from physiotherapy and strength and conditioning and the economies of scale about being in one stable, but they're very much their own boxers. They're very much their own performers, you know, so they can perform, they can be their own person, but 20% of the core is in here where they can benefit on our realizing potential development framework. They can benefit from, you know, our purpose in terms of realizing potential for the people who work for us and for the companies we invest in. for kind of the vision that we have, the brilliance in the team we have here in Broadlake, but with Tom and Kev and Pete and Leanne. So that's kind of what we do here, you know.
Tell me about then selection of the companies. How does Broadlake find suitable candidates to partner with and to bring into the family?
Yeah, so you will have heard us either in the press or in previous podcasts talk about the number of companies that we will meet just to choose one. Mm. In investment or in entrepreneurship, it's probably the closest thing to marriage that you're ever going to get. So you got to be very sure the person you're marrying is the person that you really love. You know, if you look at the stats out there on the success of acquisitions, predominantly acquisitions are nowhere near as successful as the companies had hoped when they began the journey. We've been very lucky in the companies that we have invested in and have acquired. They have grown exponentially, but that's not by accident. So we're not the kind of buy and flip kind of company, Connor. So that if we believe for many of the companies that this is a journey, not a destination. Mm-hmm. We believe that we have built really good platforms here now in healthcare, in office services, in fast moving consumable goods, in manufacturing. So we have great platforms here. A big part of our focus is add-ons or bolt-ons to those companies. I mean, we've probably made about, you know, 16 acquisitions already, bolt-ons to the platforms we already have. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say we wouldn't go down another route for another platform that we might identify, but in the main, our main focus is how do we enhance the value and the strength of the platforms we currently have. Mm.
Do you change the businesses at all? I mean, imagine I was a business owner and I was going to sell to you. Mm. What does that process look like before and after the investment?
Yeah, no, good question. So we kind of see ourselves in Broadlake, Connor, as almost, I guess, the investment equivalent or the growth equivalent of Intel Inside. So we believe we have a little chip, okay? And on this little chip, there are things like our principles, which you would have seen on the board here in the office and on the painting on the wall. These principles are the basis to which we work with each other, are the basis to which we do business with each other. These are principles that, you know, we hire through, we promote through, we reward through. So that's a massive part of it. We have a development framework. Our senior leaders across the businesses would probably do somewhere in the region of 21 to 22 days of development over the year, which is significant. You'd appreciate if you talk to many companies and you ask them what sort of development time they put into their leaders, it's going to be nowhere near 21, 22 days. So we put a huge amount of time into that. From a strategic and from a planning perspective, you know, from a budgeting perspective, we have a really cool set of tools that we use in relation to how we plan, how we grow. We actually have, for every business, Connor, we have a playbook. So a published playbook. Mm-hmm. There are 10 chapters, and that can range from technology to people and culture to finance to customer and customer appreciation. And in those, each individual chapter, there are high fives. And you'd have seen a five on the wall on your way into the driveway of the building, a big number five. Well, that's what that five means. That's our high five. So each chapter has a high five, which are the five most critical things that the owner of that department or that function must do this year. Mm-hmm. And then each of those five high fives have key performance indicators that we manage and that we measure and we look at every month. So it's almost like a much more modern, much more dynamic business plan. Mm-hmm. But it comes in a published playbook. So every single business in the Broadlake family have a playbook that they use as kind of like their Google Maps for the year. So I know exactly my tracks, where I'm going. I know exactly when I hit the milestones of a bad target. I know exactly where my brand needs to be. I know exactly where my people development need to be. I know exactly where my technology needs to be. So all of those tools we believe fits into a chip. Mm-hmm. And that if you're the right business for our family, we put that chip into you. Mm-hmm. Now that chip is only 20%. I mean, the 80% is in the entrepreneur themselves. The 80% is in the product, the service, the why of the company. The 20% is the bit we put in. We believe it's quite powerful. Mm-hmm. but we don't take away the individuality of the companies either. That's really important to us.
Is it all entrepreneurs that you invest in, or is it companies that might be owned by other private equity companies, or what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a mixture. You know, it's a mixture. I think, you know, it depends on the kind of company that it is in our family. It depends on the kind of companies that we're looking at. It depends on the strategy we have. So, you know, one thing that we tend to try and do an awful lot is to look. So we plan for kind of 0 to 5 years, but our horizon is 5 to 10. Mm-hmm. So what's ahead of us in the immediate 5 years? But equally, you know, if we ever exit these businesses, which we're under no pressure to do, and one thing just to mention to you, Connor, and to your listeners, is Broadlake is our own money. There is no institutional investor in us. So we have no clock. We have no shareholders. We have no quarterly reports. So on how we grow, when we grow, how fast we grow sits with us. And there's huge power in that, and there's huge space and comfort in that, and that we don't have to exit these businesses. There's no compulsion on us to do so. So, you know, it's if I'm so bold to say, it's almost kind of Warren Buffett-esque, is that sometimes we buy to keep, and we're very happy with that. We know from a growth perspective in our current family businesses, from an EBITDA perspective, from a cash conversion perspective, and from a runway perspective, as we look ahead, we know they're all very strong companies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're in no rush or no compulsion to either buy or sell any, you know? Mm-hmm.
What do you look for in terms of the business itself and a strong business? Mm. What is a strong business to you?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's a really good question. So one thing that I've learned in my journey is a question that I believe the vast majority of companies can't answer, which is the why. And it's such a simple question, but I genuinely have struggled in many of my interactions with brilliant entrepreneurs, small and large, that can they articulate successfully and clearly their why. You know, our product is the best in the world because of, you know, we are better than the competitors because of. And I remember sitting on an entrepreneurship committee at one stage with Bill Lau from SOS Ventures, and he has a great phrase called, so what? You know, so after you give your why, his immediate response is, so what? So if you can answer the why and the so what, that's really important, I think, for a business to succeed. Sustainability of income is really important. So the predictability and the recurability and the sustainability of income is something that I would deem to dictate strong businesses versus weak businesses. So if you turn on your lights in the morning on the first of the month and you have to create all your income that month from scratch, that would worry me. Whereas if you could turn on your lights in the morning and know that 50 to 80% of your business is already done and you just have to fight for the last 10, 20, 30%. You know, so that's why if you look at software as a service companies, they're so valuable, Connor, because of the fact that there's a huge predictability to their income. So there's very little effort that they have to put into the month because they know that 100% of their sales from last month will happen again next month. And all they got to do is add more sales to scale. So I think sustainability, recurability are hugely important. And I would say lastly, and I should have started with this, was people. I mean, you know, one thing, Connor, I've learned, and I would say later, disappointingly enough, I'd say later rather than earlier, is the importance of people. I would say it was probably one of my early failings is understanding, even though I would be really good with people, I've always had fantastic relationships with people, with suppliers, with customers, being one of my biggest strengths, but I didn't appreciate talent. I didn't appreciate talent the way I do today. Our purpose as an organization is to realize potential, not just of the businesses, but of the people in them. And it's funny, I was watching the Coach's Playbook show on Netflix recently. There's 5 or 6 series, and one was Jose Mourinho, the special one. And one of his insights I thought was really fascinating. We talked about, how do you coach Ronaldo? You know, like, you're not going to teach him to be a better footballer because he's spectacular, you know. You're not going to teach him how to kick free kicks better. But what you can help him with is the team he plays in. You can help him with the environment that he plays in. You can help him with, you know, his sports psychology or his mental or physical health. You can make him a better player, but you can do all these things really well. And I think we do spend a lot of time now. I would say proportionately, we spend a lot more time on talent than we do on finance. And that's a fact. I would say by a ratio of 4 or 5 to 1. We spend a lot of time looking at our leaders, you know, trying to figure out how we can develop them further. Having a look at the team dynamics across the management teams of the families that we've invested in. So a huge amount of effort we put in to understand how do we get the best from people? Mm-hmm. How do we play them in the right position? I mean, one of the most probably compelling analogies I can give you is that if you're playing a football game and you're a left footer and somebody puts you on the right wing, that's really hard to cross the ball in if you're a left kicker and you're on the right wing. So the best place to put me is to put me on the left wing, so because it's more natural for me to kick the ball in with my left foot. Mm-hmm. So that is no different in business. You know, if somebody's strong, put them in the position they're strong in. And more importantly, give them clear tracks. Our first, probably our most important principle is clear tracks. You know, can we be absolutely clear that everybody in the organization knows exactly what's required of them, knows exactly when that's required of them, and knows exactly how they know what they've got there. Mm-hmm. Clear tracks are so important. And companies and people, unbeknownst to themselves, are just not clear enough. And the power we've seen now during COVID, where our businesses have thrived, is we've been able to lean into those principles, and lean into those principles, particularly around clear tracks. So we've had to change those tracks during COVID, but we were able to get on them very quickly.
You use a lot of sports analogies to talk about business. Take me back to your sporting background. When did that start, and when did you finish up?
Yeah. So I grew up in a family, Connor, of very, very competitive sports people. I had an older brother. That I think at one stage, Connor, he was an All-Ireland boxing champion, he was an All-Ireland athletics champion, and there was some other sport I'm sure he was an All-Ireland champion at as well, and went on to play Irish University's rugby, and I just a really talented fella. I, on the other hand, was the less talented, but probably a little bit more resilient of the two of us. Mm-hmm. So at underage level, which is actually quite interesting if I just start there for a second, at underage level, and it's funny, as a coach now of kids myself. So I played full forward on the under-12C hurling team in Aroge in a game that was nil-all. So that's some achievement, to play full forward in a game in hurling with nil-all when you're full forward. So to give you a sense of, like, I played in the second or third team the whole way up to maybe under-14. But then I was lucky, maybe late bloomer, you know, by 15, I was playing inter-county hurling and football, and I played that the whole way through to minor level. So I suppose the point I'm making now is, I know when I coach kids in Kilmacock Crokes and in GA, is that, you know, our B, C and D players should be getting as much attention as our A players, because I'm assured of the stats that tell us that a significant portion of those guys will be our future talent, you mm-hmm. know, at minor, under 21 and senior level. Similarly, you know, parallel to my GA career, I boxed internationally for Ireland for a number of years. I was lucky to box youth, junior and senior internationally. Spectacular experience. You know, got to see the world. Boxing's a tough sport. You know, it's the kind of sport that you're in there and it is just mano a mano. And if something goes wrong, unfortunately, there's not 14 other guys to help you out. So it really just you. So it has given me as a sport a massive grounding in life, I think. You know, I would be particularly resilient. I've been through a few hairy experiences, even in business, that I think boxing has stood to me. An annus cerebralis in 07, 08, where accountants were saying, you know, you should close, you should hang your creditors, and you should start again. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, you know, out in the car park in Ennis in Ballymaley Business Park, where our headquarters is now, ironically, having a good cry and thinking, you know, this isn't going to beat me. And I made a decision then that, you know, this is the third round and there's 30 seconds left, and, you know, what do you do? Do you fall over or do you get up? And I decided to get up, and, you know, the rest is history in terms of where the business went from 08 to 12 to 15 up to now in 2020. So boxing gave me a huge sense of resilience. Mm-hmm. But also I noticed about sport and boxing, which I'm now seeing a lot more in business and understanding a lot more in business, is the inches. That extra effort you put in sport, that extra 15 minutes of training, or the extra 15 minutes a week, or that extra mile, you know, that extra round, you know, that extra time you spend, you know, the concentration you put on the things that are important as an athlete, is the same in business. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe what you do in one corner of your life represents what you do in every corner of your life. one thing that we do very, very well is we do the inches. You know, we do the concentration on the very last millimeter of what's required. You'll have seen that from this building when you came in today. Mm-hmm. The effort we put into what the building says to people, from walking into it to when they come in here, we're very clear what it says. Mm-hmm. We're very clear of the ambitious message it gives. We're very clear on the world, kind of world-class element to how we think. The difference between world-class athletes and not, or difference between world-class businesses and not, I think are those inches. Mm-hmm. And that makes the big difference.
Mm-hmm. And it is actually, the detail in the place is incredible, you know, and the way the principles and everything are kind of mapped out throughout it's quite clear that you spent a lot of time thinking about that.
Now Pete, my business partner Pete, who if I was to say, and it's funny, I don't know many business partners that could say that about each other, but if I was to say somebody that has had an exponentially positive influence on my life or my career is being my business partner, Pete. Mm-hmm. I don't know, can you edit that out in case he hears it, but like, in terms of, you know, I would say, I would love to take some credit for this amazing building. Mm-hmm. And equally, I'd love if I could take some credit on some of the amazing tools we've built in this business in Broadlake, mm-hmm. that our companies use, but I can't, because they are the brilliance and the brainchild of Pete. He's the kind of fella where it's a uniqueness of being able to, he would kill you for 50 cent, but he'd give you his heart.
Mm.
It's the most unique talent that somebody can have, that like, from a respect for money perspective, a hugely successful fella, but respects every 50 cent, respects every euro, but equally is kind enough to give you his heart. Mm. I think as well, one of the reasons I was happy to come in here to Broadlake a year and a half ago, Connor, was to be in the same room as somebody that I would look to from an inspiration perspective, I would look to from a learning perspective. Like, I'm 44 now, I've been very lucky, we upscaled two fantastic businesses, but I'm really keen to kick on to that next level. Mm-hmm. And spending time with Pete, you know, affords that. I feel I'm very lucky in that regard. And I'm also lucky, I have was a mentor, Ian Kingston, that I do a lot of work with. We were actually up Wicklow Mountains yesterday morning at 7, going through things. And, you know, I would say to any business entrepreneur or any of your listeners who want to develop further in life, I would say a mentor is a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a piece of advice, but the power of having somebody to really challenge you, not just as an entrepreneur, but as a person. We're very lucky with Ian, who works with myself, and also works with a lot of our leadership teams, both individually and collectively. A big part about Ian would be, you know, focus a lot on how people show up. A lot about on who you are as an individual, you know, how you live our principles, you know, and how you lean into them, particularly in difficult times.
Mm.
And, you know, one thing that we did very successfully during COVID, Connor, was we had a system called My Now. So My Now was, we noticed very early on the challenge that the pandemic was having on our people, from a mental health perspective. So what we were able to do with the likes of Stefan, our in-house personal trainer downstairs, and Ian Kingston, is that we were able to put, and Neil O'Brien, who's a psychologist we do a lot of work with, we put a whole program of events over COVID. So we had early morning gym sessions that people could dial on through Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
We had our partners in Pilates, where we were able to get Pilates, people wanted to dial on for Pilates. They could do, we then had lunchtime talks where people had a chance in teams or individuals, had a chance to just talk about how they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
We had kind of wind down talks in the evening time where people, again, through our psychologist Neil or our mentors Ian, had a chance just to kind of go through what's going on for them, you know? So that My Now initiative was a super initiative during the early stage of the pandemic. We're now going to develop that further. So one of our principles is top of your game, change your game. So that worked brilliantly well in March. But what it feels like, Connor, is that we get the sense from listening to our people that it's almost like you're going up a mountain and you get to the top, but then the clouds start to move away and you realize that the peak is another kilometer up.
Mm.
And that's tough to take. So people thought, you know, we'd be out of this by June, by July, by August, by September. And now we're in October And as the clouds have moved away, it is as high as it was. So that's a huge, huge thing now that we're conscious of. So we now need to go back to mind now again and look at, right, how do we adjust this program to have an even bigger impact on our people over the next number of months as we get through this, almost what I feel is almost this next phase of COVID.
You give Pete a lot of credit for kind of coming up with everything, but there's obviously, whether it was by your own design or whether it's by just buying into the ideas and everything that Pete had come up with, you have a lot of passion for what's happening here, quite obviously. Because from talking to you, it just seems like that this, you always had this, and that it seems like you've had this business for years, but you've only been here for 18 months. So how did it all come about? How did that happen?
It's a really interesting story. So Pete coached kind of young academy kids in Kilmacock Crokes, under six, the same time I was coaching. So our both of our eldest boys were playing hurling and football at the time with Crokes, and I'd seen Pete there and I'd coached with him, and he's a kind of a larger than life individual, both on and off the pitch, from a coaching and from an entrepreneurial perspective. And I got to see him live, for want of a better phrase, in the coaching. And one day he reached out to me and said, listen, you must come in sometime to the Broad Lake building and sit down and have a chat, you know. So I took nothing more into it than it was a chat, but I hadn't realised that it was a date. But I hadn't even dressed for it or thought about it, but it was definitely a date. So, at that stage, I mean, we both sat down, we talked about kind of the ambitions we had. We both talked about the kind of values we both shared. It's funny, like I'd had a number of approaches, Connor, before that I wasn't interested in, because I was happy with the journey we were on. But you know what, there was just something about that conversation with Pete, something about kind of what he stood for, something about what he wanted to do that I was really attracted to. So we went for it, and you know, it's been hugely successful, you know, since, you know, our sales have more than doubled, you know, since coming on board with Broadlake. And they already were going, you know, they had grown exponentially before that, but have grown again subsequently to coming in here to Broadlake. And to be honest with you, I think, you know, sometimes people might mistake that I might be drinking the Broadlake Kool-Aid too much, Connor, which is interesting, as opposed to, but what I found with Broadlake, what I found with what we represent is I believe in it. I have a significant belief in what we're doing. I have a significant belief in profit and cash and success or outputs. They're really, really the 2 or 3%. It's the inputs are the 96-97%. And that's how you build truly successful, sustainable companies. So I must admit I'm a believer. I appreciate sounding like something from Scientology, but I genuinely widely believe that the vision that we have, I believe the purpose that we have in realizing potential, the principles through which everything that we do is grounded in, and the ambition we have is something that I've really bought into. And I hope it's great. Thank you that you've seen that or felt that on the energy side. I absolutely believe in it. And what's great is a lot of the senior people across the organizations believe in it. And again, I have to admit that if I look at the last 6 months through COVID, and I looked at how our senior leadership teams have performed, it's been spectacular. And I know it's been the year and a half, 2 years of investment that they've put in, the belief that they've had that have got us through this, because they've had to really lean in. Some of our businesses have had to have really tough decisions, Connor, you know, like many businesses across the country. And I feel for them, you know, retailers, hoteliers, you know, the kind of decisions they've had to make, the kind of experience for employees has been horrific. And our business have been no different, but they made decisions quickly. They made decisions, I believe, Connor, where one thing we agreed in March when this happened, we agreed there would be no emotional scarring. We agreed that we would be honest with people. You know, we would believe that we would work hard, that if we had to furlough people, we'd get them back as soon as we could. And I think that's what we've really stood for. And I think it's amazing both the people who were furloughed, who are now back, and indeed the staff themselves who've continued on to deliver services during COVID have appreciated that the leadership teams and the companies were honest, were transparent. And I think the emotional scarring is non-existent, or if it's existent, it's tiny, it's minimal. So that's something I was really proud of, that we didn't scar during COVID. And I think that really put us now in a good position to kick on into 2021, you know.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
Take me back to the start of TTM Healthcare. How did that come about?
It's funny how sliding door moments. I after I finished college in 98, I went to work in London. Me and a buddy of mine, and I had to work two jobs because I had too good a time in college, Connor. So I worked by day, working in a, they used to manufacture hard drives for computers back in the olden days when you'd floppy disks and all sorts of stuff, you know, 100 years ago. Then at nighttime, then I worked for Sky in a call center. So all the things that you can do through your remote control now, you had to ring for all those years ago. So if you wanted a really good movie, you rang the call center, you got me, and I put out the movie for you, basically. So I did that. The aim we had was we were going to go to Australia. So we were paying off loans and then saving to go to Australia. We had our flights booked to fly, I think, maybe 1 week or 2 weeks from when we decided to go get our visa, which is not such a good idea, as you'll hear in a second. When we went to Fleet Street to get our visas, we were told, guys, there's an 8-week waiting list. Mm. So it's amazing sliding doors. I decided I'm going back to Ireland. My buddy didn't, went to Australia, married, the kids never came home. So whereas I came home and I worked for a one-man band recruitment company in Ennis. And, you know, the universe definitely works and definitely conspires, I think, positively, depending on how you show up. And I had a fantastic experience. I learned everything you shouldn't do as an entrepreneur through this guy. And everything that you should do. I got like a PhD in entrepreneurship live with this guy. We scaled that business over the kind of, you know, 2, 3, 4 years I spent there, 2 or 3 years I spent there. But in 2002, at the tender age of 25, I decided I can do this better. And the first few years, the answer to that question was I couldn't, for the record, but I thought I could. So I took a jump at 25 and, you know, everything I thought of what entrepreneurship would be and starting a business would be was not for the first few years. I think if you could design probable potholes that a guy would go through, kind of, I fell into all of them. Mm. So, you know, didn't make decisions quickly enough with staff who weren't performing. You know, there's a kind of a belief I have now is that you hire slow and fire fast. Mm. That's so important. I didn't live by that at the start. I have a PhD in cash now. I didn't have back then. And, you know, when you've got creditors on your phone, on the phone to you, chasing down money that's due, you know, that sticks with you. And it's something that, I, from a whole appreciation of cash flow management. And, you know, that was a huge, huge lesson for me. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think, although it was tough in the first kind of 4 or 5 years, I think I kind of had an education in entrepreneurship over those 4 or 5 years. Mm. I wouldn't change a thing, because I think they've done me good stead, or it's done me good stead now later in life. Mm. So basically, the first few years, best way I could describe it, Connor, is they say that the bamboo tree stays underground for about 5 years. I don't know if you've ever heard this, for about 5 years. And then after 5 years, it bursts through the ground and it grows 180 feet in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of us. So we were under the ground from 02 to kind of 07, 08. And in 08, we exploded. And it was kind of market adaptability. So 08, obviously, there was a recession. We were kind of quite small. We were generating maybe $500,000 in revenue at that stage. Kind of permanent recruitment is all we were doing. And then we moved to contingency temporary workforce supply because of the recession. And the business boomed. Mm-hmm. So we had a couple of really good products and services in relation to how we supported customers who couldn't take on permanent staff, where we employed the staff and contracted them out to them. Mm. And grew from kind of 08 to 11, from kind of 500,000 to 10, 11 million over that kind of couple of year period. Then in 11 and 12, kind of we again further evolved. I had felt a couple of things. One is, we have a fantastic recruitment company, but what I noticed was we began to do things outside of recruitment, but continued to be treated as a recruitment company. So our company, our customers would look for staff from us, then our customers would look for a manager from us, and then it went to almost, could we locate a facility for them? So I'd felt that, listen, maybe there's something in this. So in 2012, Resilience Care was born, and that now is an organization that employs about 540 people. It has a network of residential care homes for children and adults with disabilities right across the country. And it has an advanced community care business. So a bit different to your Uncle Mick in McCarney in Home Instead. Mick's is very much on the elderly care side. This one is very much on the complex care side. So it's where we look after children with tracheostomies or ventilators, where we provide a kind of a hospital in the home. Mm-hmm. So that business since 2012 has scaled significantly. So, you know, if I think back to 2002 to what we do now, Connor, like, it's a fundamentally very different business. You know, so we have everything from supplying international staff into the health service in Northern Ireland. We have a contract for 5,000 people up there, right across to the UK, where 1 in 5 nurses who enter the NHS from overseas come through us. Mm-hmm. To, you know, about half, you know, we have a significant contract with the HSE for temporary staff across the Irish network. We have community services in a lot of counties where we provide outreach and new direction services for people with disabilities, where we help to enhance the quality of their lives. We have people in residential homes in a number of counties across the country, and we have about 75-76 services for people with complex care, where we provide that hospital and home. So mm-hmm. it's a very diverse healthcare business now compared to what it was started with. So which is really exciting.
So I had read that, as I told you before, so you went from around 500,000, you know, even if just to 10 million, say, that's a 20x increase in the space of 4 or 5 years or something like that. So obviously the change in the business model helped.
Yes.
What else caused that growth? Yeah.
So one thing was obviously adapting to the opportunities. Mm-hmm. To look at that slightly differently, Connor, was sometimes you have to be out there shaking the trees, out there speaking to people to spot these opportunities. And I think we were doing that quite a lot of the time, which was great. I would have to say as well that a significant part of my success, that sometimes I feel like a bit of a fraud, Connor, a significant part of my success is people I've met along my journey. So Paul McDonald, who's the managing director of TTM Healthcare, was employee number 5 in that business, who's now managing director. Mm. You know, she had an exponential effect on that business when she joined 10, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then if I look at Laura Keane, who's the managing director of Resilience Care, you know, she joined the business in 2016, and it is a, you know, 6x business since she joined. And then again, as I talked about earlier in the interview with Pete in 2016, again had an exponential effect. So I do at times feel like a bit of a fraud. I've been lucky that, you know, I've met 2 or 3 people along the journey that's had a huge effect on the success of the business. Mm-hmm. But in that scale, just to go back to your original question around the scale of 500,000 to 10 million to 20 to 40 to 90, where we are at the moment, a big part of, I think, where I may have a strength in scaling businesses is I've become very acutely aware of the triggers for growth. And I've been very, very clear to stick to the knitting and stick to what I understand. Mm-hmm. People have asked me a lot of times, particularly in recruitment, why I'm not in finance recruitment or IT recruitment or commercial recruitment. We are very, very good at healthcare. Mm-hmm. We are world class at what we do. It's the same in our healthcare services business. We are a fantastic provider of services to provide support to people with disabilities and complex care. But we stick to the knitting. We stick to what we're really good at. Secondly, from a trigger, from growth perspective, you know, companies kind of go from zero to hero very quickly and fall off a cliff. To grow a business in a sustainable fashion, you have to understand the nuts and bolts of your business. So in terms of triggers for growth, when you decide to take on that extra member of staff, when you decide to go into that extra territory, when you decide to invest in that piece of capital, that has a huge effect on lots of parts of your business that you have to be aware of. Mm-hmm. So from an overhead perspective, from an expense perspective, from a margin perspective, from a margin percentage perspective, one thing we've been able to do very successfully is understand those dynamics. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to grow quickly and exponentially, it's very important that you understand your cash conversion, because cash is like fuel or oxygen. Mm-hmm. You run out of cash, you're dead. So huge important to understand that as you're growing and as you're driving profit, what percentage of your profit are you driving to cash? Because you're going to need that fuel to continue to grow. Very profitable businesses go bust. Mm-hmm. Because they run out of money, they run out of oxygen. So one thing I think, Connor, that thankfully I have, or we have as a collective, have been very clear on what our triggers for growth are, Have we understood those triggers? Do we know the effect? Do we know the effect on overhead? Are we happy from an operational gearing perspective? So one thing I think that I think we've done very, very well is we've understood when to grow. We haven't overstretched ourselves, but we've been brave all the same, mm-hmm. you know?
I get the sense then, like, the business model changed and you obviously had some understanding of mm. why this was helping the business to grow. I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that it was the case that you decided to hire someone else and then filled their capacity and then it was hire the next person. You know, what did that look like? What did managing this growth look like in terms of that growth spurt of a 20x mm. in such a short space of time is incredible.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, and you must have had to learn from being a you know a CEO of a 500,000 euro company to a 10 million company is the change even personally for that is huge. Yeah.
So I can give you the honest answer or the dishonest answer. Yeah, the honest answer is that was horrific.
Mm.
Okay, and I'll go back to the horrific element in a second, but what I see now that I didn't know then is that as you grow, it should get easier.
Hmm.
I know you're thinking, are you mental? No, but genuinely, what I began to learn here as we're scaling these businesses is that if the machine is right, if the leadership team is right, if the culture is right, if the systems are right, as you grow, if you double and grow, it shouldn't be twice as harder.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be. If it's twice as hard, you're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's my belief today, and that's why we spend so much time on our machine. That's why we spend so much time with the leaders across the business, because as you grow, it should get easier. So therefore, you can grow with more ease. So that's the principle, and that's the thesis today, Connor. Now let me go back to 2008, 2009, and 10. And probably up to 15 or 16. So that's 7 or 8 year period where we grew exponentially. Even though I'm 44, in dog years or entrepreneurial years, I think I'm 80. So those years have a real effect where we grew exponentially, but it was great and it was exciting, but it was tough. And you know, one of the failings I had at the time, which I hope I'm better at now, is that I didn't celebrate success on the journey like I would celebrate success now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean celebrating success in a champagne sense. I mean celebrating success in acknowledging what people have achieved.
Mm.
So, you know, one thing that, and I think Paula and probably Laura as well would attest to, as the ladies who run both my businesses, is I never stopped. You know, and you know they probably at times wondered, like, what's enough for this guy? You mm. know, it's constant. So, you know, we're much better now at celebrating success. Mm. You know, and stopping and smelling the roses and understanding what we've achieved. Back then, it was just more.
Mm.
So I would do that very differently. But that was very, very tough. From a people perspective, I probably put undue pressure and strain, Connor, on the people over that period.
Mm.
I expected an awful lot of people, and I imagine as a leader then I was more of the kind of the charge of the light brigade type of leader, and you know that ended terribly, you know, the charge of the light brigade. But there was a bit of that in it where I think people followed me and they were prepared to follow me, but the pain that would have probably caused a lot of people who are still with the business, I'm more than aware now that I wouldn't have been at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to say that by design we achieved that, but I think it was by energy, by resilience, by grit.
Mm-hmm.
But none of those are the things we would use today to grow. You know, we grow through people, through system, through process.
Mm.
So it's, you know, it's a much more disciplined orientated version of how we would have grown back then. But listen, again, I wouldn't change it, Connor. I wouldn't change that experience from 08 to 16 for the world. It was a huge grounding, you know. I think as we're having this chat this morning, it's almost for me that it's almost like a box set. You know, there was the 02 to 08 period, which is almost the degree. And then there's the 08 to kind of 16 period, which is almost the master's or the postgrad. And I think the period after that, I found myself almost on the doctoral program and trying to understand things better and how to do things better or easier than I would have back in the 08 days. So that exponential growth was probably on the back of grit and energy and people that were prepared to go the distance. You know, that was the big thing, I think, in terms of how we were so successful or how we grew so exponentially in those kind of 7-8 years.
Mm-hmm. Did you have competitors at that time?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. I've always had, which I don't believe many companies do have, I have a huge respect for competitors. And I would, there's a great, one of the former CEOs of, I think it was Walmart, is that he said that he spent more time walking the aisles of Target than the CEO of Target. You know, so he spent so much time looking at his competition, he believed he knew more about the competition than the CEO himself. So I would say similarly to myself is that I would be very interested in what our competitors are doing, particularly interested in what our competitors do better. And they do. There's lots of things that across our companies, across our range of services, there are competitors that do things better than us, that they might be better at. They might be quicker, they might be cheaper, or they might be faster at certain things. And a big thing that I would look at now is how we get better, cheaper, faster than they are. So, you know, throughout the years, you know, I think it's important for companies to understand their competition, but to try to climb out of their own way, you know, the first reaction is, sure, we're better than the competition. You know, A, how do you know that? And B, have you asked anybody that can verify that? So, you know, a big part of what we would do, and it's actually a full chapter in our playbook that I mentioned earlier in the interview, we would have a chapter on competition, a chapter on industry, where we try to understand our competitors. We also have a chapter, in that chapter, there's a high five where we look at who we admire, either within our industry or outside our industry, and why. So we admire CPL as a hugely successful multinational recruitment company, probably one of the biggest in Europe. And Ann Herity, the CEO who runs that company, it's an amazing company. I have huge regard for them. Similarly, we would look at someone like an Apple. So from a brand perspective, I mean, they are the ultimate when it comes to brand, you know. From a customer service perspective, you look at Voxboro in Cork, Dan and Kylie, who built an amazing business. Their approach to customer service is probably the best in the world. So we would take we would spend a lot of time looking out at competitors or looking out at industry leaders and say, right, how can we learn from them? How can we be better than them? Or, you know, what are they better at that we can learn from, you know?
During the time growing the two businesses before you came here, how much of it was kind of driven by, you know, there's a lot of intangibles when I come in here that have been explained to me, you know, the principles and why you do everything, and there's an intention kind of behind everything. Was that the same in your previous businesses?
No, I would say no.
Do you think it would have helped?
In the sense, Connor, that if it was in terms of horse and cart, if Broadlake was before or was there from the outset for TTM Resilience, that's a really good question. I'm going to say no to that, okay? And I think I need to say no in that, you know, there's a great book that What Got You Here Won't Get You There. The people who ran, you know, my businesses and my colleagues and Paula and Laura and their management teams got the business to where they got to by 2016. You know, there was a reason people purchased from us in terms of the quality of care or the quality of service that we provided or the quality of people that they were dealing with. There was a reason for that. And sometimes in life, things happen for a reason. I've talked about the universe a few times in this conversation. The universe conspires, and they conspired at the time to bring us to Broadlake. And on the wall on the way in, you'd have seen on the front wall in number 4. So Broadlake's on its 4.0. So Broadlake's gone through 4 stages over the last 12, 13 years. Broadlake 1, 2, 3, and 4. We're on Broadlake 4.0. So we came in at Broadlake 3.0, and I think that was a good time for us. Whereas, you know, if Broadlake were at the start and at 1 or 2.0, it might have been the same impact. So I think many times in life, things happen for a reason. And the timing that we came together was good timing. And I would say, you know, the last, you know, couple of years, you know, the learning we've gone through here in Broadlake, you know, I've been lucky to be live and to be part of that learning. And to be honest with you, we have an enormous runway of learning ahead of us. I mean, that's the exciting part. You know, you think we've scaled businesses to the size of what we have here in Broadlake, hugely successful businesses in an Irish and international level. But we still believe we're only touching the surface. We haven't really even got started, I think, as to what we can do here.
What does your day-to-day look like? Is it managing the companies? Is it finding new companies to bring into the family?
Yeah. So it's the last number of months. So what I might give you a sense, Connor, of what it's been for the last couple of months and what the ambition is for our time. So, you know, a big part of what we've been spending our time on over the last number of months is getting what we call our world-class tools right. Okay, so our playbooks, which I mentioned to you in terms of how the businesses, it's almost like a very modern business plan. So getting our playbooks, we're now on our fourth iteration of those playbooks and they've got better and better. So we've been, again, fine-tuning those playbooks. You know, we've been fine-tuning the principles in terms of how they're going to be socialized further across the organization right down to the front line. We've been spent a lot of time on our Realizing Potential framework, which is our development framework for our top 30 leaders across the businesses. So we spent a lot of time getting that ready for 2021. And then we've been spent a lot of time over the last period of time on our vision for the next 5 years, the kind of impact we want to have either socially or environmentally, the kind of either acquisitive or organic growth we want to achieve across the businesses. So that's been a huge amount of my time over the last, I'm going to say, 2-3 months, which I'm happy about, and it's ironic, it's been in the middle of a pandemic, we've been working on those kind of things. Now, we've been able to do those because our companies are ran by top-class management teams, so we've been able to do that. It's been a real luxury to be able to have time for that thinking because the businesses are run so well. By fine-tuning those tools, it's equipping those businesses for their next stage of exponential growth. So where we do want to spend more time here in Broadlake in supporting the leadership teams and the businesses, is getting out there, finding out what's the movement, how customer behavior has changed during pandemic and post-pandemic. You know, what's going on in the world, in healthcare, in office services, in manufacturing, in FMCG. What are the things that we can learn, even from a talent perspective? So we see two types of acquisitions for us in the future, companies and talent. So we know we've got brilliant talent within the business, but the kind of ambitions that we have means we're going to have to find fantastic talent outside the business. So a big part of our time now is going to be spent too is trying to see what's out there from a talent perspective. So to look to see, not just to acquire companies, but to acquire talent. We are on an acquisition trail. We are looking for companies that we believe meet our values and would fit nicely into the platforms we have today. So a good part of our time is going to be spending kissing frogs and hoping that there are princesses behind those frogs. The big thing we're doing now, we almost feel, and sorry about all the sporting analogies, Connor, but do feel that we're kind of in pre-season, and we've been in pre-season for a couple of months. We're kind of raring to get going out to the season, like get out to the pitch, and I think we're only weeks away from that. And once we get on the pitch, a big part of our focus will be return on time. What are we spending our time on? Is it the best area to spend our time on it? And making sure that we're adding value to the businesses. Because ultimately, we don't run the businesses. We have very capable people that run them. Our job is to support them. So we need to make sure that we're staying on our track, getting out of their way, providing the insights and the support we can, but allowing them the space to run their businesses.
Do you enjoy that sort of helicopter view, kind of strategic, or nearly even one step removed from that, kind of seeing what's ahead and what way you want to do things? Do you prefer that kind of work to actually the day-to-day running of a business? And
yeah, it's funny, you've got me at an interesting inflection moment or point for me in that regard, is that I love the fight. I love the operations, I love customers, I love winning customers, you know, I love, you know, appreciating the customers that we work with. And it's been a transition, you know, in trying to move from player to sideline to almost coach's box, for want of a better phrase. That's been a tough movement for me because, you know, it's a different skill set. It's a different skill set when you make the calls to when you try as best you can to influence the calls. Because ultimately the calls are made by the captain on the pitch, that being our managing directors, and the players being our employees. So before I was that captain and I could make those decisions on the pitch, whereas I'm not that person today. So that's a real tough transition. I found myself getting close to getting that right. At the early stages, you know, I could see that the managing director just wanted me to get out of their way. And I could see that they were right. So now I think I've got to a stage of rhythm or momentum where, you know, it's the right type of interaction. The insights are enough to add value. I'm asking questions rather than answering. Mm. So I think that the trickiest for leadership is ask world-class questions. So a big thing is, you know, I don't do my children's homework. If I did, they'd never learn. So the same thing for our leaders in the businesses. They've got to do their homework. They've got to learn themselves. They learn themselves. They cut their knee. They're not likely going to fall in the same place again, you know, once they've felt the pain of cutting their knee. Mm. If we spend our life trying to put cushions on every part where they could hurt themselves, we'd never win. We'd never get forward. We need people to cut their knees. We need people to make mistakes. By making mistakes, a great place, great way to learn. So that's been the hardest part, where I could catch them, but I can't. They've got to learn. That's been something that I've got more and more used to. And, you know, one phrase I've heard recently, which I've loved, I've been very conscious in my life that I've, from an individual sport like boxing to entrepreneurship, has the potential to make you selfish. You got to be very careful, because it has always been about you. And it is so not about me now. And the real key is share your success and own your failure. And that's a real phrase I began to get more and more behind, is that as I moved away from, you know, from an individual sport or a role in entrepreneurship where it can be lonely at times, I'm much preferring a scenario now where it's empowering people to make those calls as opposed to making them myself, you know.
Brian Crowley, thank you very much for joining me.
Lovely. Thanks, Connor.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.